This journey is about listening to Father.
The promised land without the promise giver is not a promised land I want to live in.
Abandon your agenda and embrace mine.
But I do know He doesn't leave me. In the midst of whatever's going on, He's there. Whatever's going on, He's there.
I'm just glad God woke me up. The ongoing dialogue of the God Journey podcast.
Back to the chill intro. I'm liking that.
Are you liking it?
Yeah, I'm liking it. I repeat myself a couple times, but I said good things.
And I have a big agenda.
So. You do. We're here to discuss Wayne's agenda.
I think we beat that to death last time, didn't we?
Yeah, but we did get a lot of spammers responding to it.
Spammers?
Yeah, we got a whole bunch of spam on the forum, huh? Something like that?
Isn't that the curse of the internet? I swear. That's spamming stuff. You know how much I get on my blogs, how much I get personally every day? I must spend a half an hour dealing with spam every day of my life. Yuck.
You don't like spam, do you?
Not one bit.
Do you like the stuff in that little can, the little like blue can?
Got to tell you, the original spam? So much either. Ew.
We used to eat that when I was young.
That explains
I don't know why. Don't go anywhere with that. I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, anyway, I just, spam on the net is just one of those things. But fortunately, Corey's been helping us keep it off the forum. So, Corey, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Corey.
For your help on that. And hopefully we've got those people banned and we'll not have much more of that.
Hey, you did some looking in terms of where we get all these people from. And there's over 55 countries listening. What's up with that?
Yeah, in the month of August, yeah, we had a list of folks that listened into us. I thought some of these countries were very interesting. It would be interesting to know some of the stories behind these. We talked about this a little bit last week because we did part of a list while August was still rolling. But one of the ones on is Turkey. Interesting.
Turkey.
And we talked about that. And then a couple of days later...
Oh, yeah, I got that email,
from a couple in Turkey.
Antioch.
Oh, my gosh. And it was fun to hear their story and what they're hungry for. And just this huge country and such a small percentage even have any idea who Jesus is. And a city of 2 million. And I think they said, if I remember right, like 200 people that go to something called a church and out of 2 million people. And she said, they're as much caught up in all that garbage as they are over here. I mean, you think of that small... But she said 50 of them were missionaries, so you got that many workers over there.
You got some imperialists going on.
You got some work to do, but...
Hey, we got someone from Pakistan. Do you think it's Osama?
I don't know.
You think?
If it is.
Osama.
Can you knock it off? Please. Yeah, Pakistan's on here, and some countries like Egypt and United Arab Emirates. And
my favorite is Burkina Faso.
Burkina Faso. You just like saying that, don't you?
I do. It's like speaking in tongues.
Burkina Faso. You didn't even know where it was.
I guessed it was Africa. I was right.
Well, it is Africa, but
west
end of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of exciting. So we got people from China. It's one of the top five countries in terms of amount of people that come to the website.
Underground church.
Either somebody very hungry there who's on the website all the time, or it's kind of getting a little play. Russia's on here, Czech Republic, Ukraine.
Ooh. Philippines, Malaysia. Wow, there's a whole bunch of them. Tunisia.
Tunisia's on here. So it's just been interesting how God has, we've never done anything to advertise this thing.
That's the coolest thing.
Because, it really is.
You know, when we started this, you and I chose not to do a radio show because we didn't want to be our own promoters.
Yep.
And it felt just nice to put something before the Lord and say, God, if this really is your idea, not just ours, then you breathe on it. And without our own PR department or tooting our own horn, it's neat to see this thing growing and touching people's lives.
It's absolutely overwhelming to think that we're sitting here in my office tonight and we're going to throw some stuff around and people from 55 countries have the potential of listening to this thing and actually are doing it. And, man, we hope more than anything it's encouraging people to...
Love and follow Jesus.
Grow in Christ, love Him. You know, embrace that, not get sucked into the whole religious way of thinking and doing things that robs us of that passion. So I think it's pretty awesome. I'm pretty blessed. We want to say welcome to all of you and hello and how are you doing? And if you can and want to get in touch with us, please do. Let us know your story and what God's doing in you.
My second favorite country besides Burkina Faso was the unknown country.
I don't have it on my list. I took it off.
Oh, it was on my first list. It was country unknown. I think it could be people from outer space.
Wow.
Could be. Maybe not. But
I doubt it.
I think all the other countries are named.
I just don't think our browser knew how to read their things. That's probably computer glitches.
To the unknown country, God bless you.
Ah. Well, you've had quite a bit of reaction to the last couple of podcasts now that we've catching a breath here and not doing them so much in advance. But my goodness, the one on Why Are Evangelicals So Angry brought quite a bit of response.
Oh,
on
yeah, I got a little bit of play. Got some dandruff. Someone sent us a link about this Jesus camp. What's up with that?
They posted it on the forum, too. There's this link to a new movie, a documentary coming out. It's already won some awards at Tribeca. It's not a Christian documentary, as I gather. I think it's an expose kind of thing.
Good or bad?
For whom?
What is it? What is Jesus Camp?
Well, we'll put the link up so people can check it out if they want to. The Jesus Camp film, as I understand it, and I'm not too sure. So I viewed the trailer. After I crawled out from under my couch after shaking in terror. actually, it's a comparison of Islamic camps for the teaching little kids how to be suicide bombers to this Christian camp somewhere, this Jesus Camp. It's teaching kids how to go, and they get that whole war rhetoric right up front, how to go to war for Jesus, and, you know, how we got to change the world, and we've got to be passionate for all that stuff. And, kids are crying, and first, second graders, man, they're in there just got swords, and they're beating sticks together like swords, and they're talking about it. And, you know, it was funny. We watched a little of it tonight before we got going. And
I saw some of my friends.
Brad recognized everybody in the video. So, at least the older people who were orchestrating. How is it that you know all those people?
Well, I have trafficked in many camps, I tell you. I have had one meanderous journey through the body of Christ. And,
there's a dark side to this journey.
No, isn't that? I don't know there's a dark side. It's just, I know a bunch of folks that are absolutely passionate for Jesus, but I think it's all—I think people don't always know what to do with that.
But it comes out in this. I mean, you're talking about groups of people, of which this wartime rhetoric and
I think
large groups beating drums in their chests and painting war paint and rah rah rah.
I'm not sure I know the drum beaters, okay. but that's not true. I do know some of the drum beaters.
Okay,
but the truth is, you know. As individuals, a lot of the folks that spearhead those, I would describe them as having one similar, you know, characteristic. There is an insatiable passion in a lot of them. They really do. They sincerely love God, and they feel called onto something. How that gets expressed is what I have kind of taken a few steps back and gone like, I'm not so sure that's always the best way. I mean, it's like, it seems like they've got to come up with a cause in order to rally some troops, and then they get an outlet that gives them a sense of, well, I'm building something, I'm making something, I am focusing my passion to accomplish something. And I think it's well-intended, but I think it does kind of go astray a little bit.
And well-intended can get you in all kinds of trouble.
Of intentions doesn't make always for the best of execution.
But you were involved. I mean, it's more than just watching these folks from distance. You were involved in some of the planning of some of these larger stadium-sized, pump-them-up-for-Jesus kinds of rallies.
Yeah.
That's how you know these folks.
Yeah, we whipped up tens of thousands of people.
And I understand the kind of the behind-the-scenes organizing of that and the generosity and self-giving of folks involved. You're telling me a little bit
Me thinks you mischaracterized some of it.
A little satire, I think.
Yeah.
Interesting what you said about it.
Well, what really became distasteful for me was not the initial passion that led to the concocting of these ideas, but it's more as some sort of fame and notoriety began to emerge as, wow, you know, this thing really is, quote, catching on. I think what was added to passion was a tremendous amount of ambition that came in from outside. And there were, like, folks that in order to make the event successful, you'd get certain, you know, it's like you'd try to go into a city and unite all the different pastors. But it became some sort of compromise deal of negotiating for stage time. I'll bring my people and my network of people if I could. And it's like, you know, it's like our desire was to give everyone a chance of participation, but the stage became really important to some people.
Yeah, I
sat there going like, okay, man, this is seemingly about the stage, not about the why we're even here or the what we're even doing. And I just had to take a step back and go like, you know, what began as a great idea is morphing into something that I'm not so thrilled about.
Which I got a taste of that just recently. I was invited to some big festival thing. They're projecting 50,000 people to show up at this thing, and they really felt called to invite me as a speaker. And I bantered back. Well, why do you want me? Is this just a dog and pony show? Because I don't do dog and pony shows. And I kept saying inside, this is not
even with Sheba doing the one ear trick.
Yeah, even with that, this is not my venue. This is not where I want to be. This is not what I want to do. But there was a day when some guy tried to send me an email about the speaker slots and try and get me signed in, sent it to the wrong address. And by the next day, he calls me saying, you know, your email bounced back. I've only got one time left. And so he sent me the speaker list. And I gave him the right email. You talk about pigs fighting for the trough. And it was all, and none of the things, the topics were about Jesus and what he's doing in our lives. It was all promoting someone's ministry, someone's book, someone's something. And I got a call saying, you know, we get these two slots. Which one's going to take? And I said, you know what? This really isn't my venue. This is not my thing. This is the last place I want to be on this particular weekend. Thanks for inviting me, but no thanks. And the organizer, I mean, she was almost in tears. Just, oh, we really wanted you. I mean, we really hate what's happening here. We're hoping you could bring a different influence to it. And I'm just saying, maybe I could, maybe I couldn't, but I'm not even going to try. In fact, I'm not even going to be in town that weekend, so I don't have to deal with it. But no, not my deal.
No, I mean, I began to recognize that, you know, I'm a person with passion. I do. I mean, that was sort of like my characteristic, that my primary thing, inspiring people unto a love for God. And yet I realized that as I watched even the fruit of my own, quote, labors for God, you know, I could cast a vision and I could rally a crowd unto the accomplishment of that vision. And it was like, wow, this is great. But when it all kind of came tumbling down, I watched and I kind of went, okay, this is great. You know, Hebrews says that everything that can be shaken will be shaken, and so that what is unshakable might remain. So I was going like, okay, great. You know, test my labors, test the fruit of what's going on. And what I saw is that without me being the center of that vision casting, a lot of the individuals that were, you know, passionately a part of what was going on, they're kind of lost. They didn't have their own internal vision that God had given them for a sense of their own marching orders. They were listening to their former general who had told the troops to go that way.
Yep.
And then when all of a sudden I'm not there giving the marching orders, then it's like, well, I don't know what to do. And I just began to realize, it's like, wait a minute, this thing is backwards. Unintentionally, but very backwards.
Hmm.
And I began to just realize, it's like, well, Lord, what do I do with this passion? Because, you know, without, quote, a cause or an army to rally or a mountain to climb, it's like living inside with all that passion, it frankly is a challenge when you don't have a sense of outlet for it.
And what's the passion for? What do you mean by passion?
I think when, as I understood it, I felt like God had really kind of touched my heart with just an inflamed love for him and a desire to really share that. But I think your ambition gets mixed in, and you look at something and you want to create something significant. And so it's like you make it larger than the simplicity of perhaps just loving the person in front of you that God sets you there. And you don't seem to be satisfied with that. And God had to kind of just quiet me down.
Because that's not as thrilling, is it?
It doesn't have the success factor to it.
See, one of the things that distresses me about these rally things we do to pump up the troops and supposedly express our passion. And this, man, 25 years ago, somebody showed me a videotape of an Amway convention. If people still know what Amway is, I guess it's still out there.
Oh, sure.
They call it Champions Now. I saw a thing of an Amway convention, and the way they were whipping this crowd into a frenzy. And I just said, you know what? That's exactly like a lot of worship services, quote unquote, rally things. Same dynamics here. Whooping the crowd into it. This is totally for money. And, you know, they put a little Jesus-y stuff into it because they were appealing to that kind of audience, even at Amway. But I look at the whole dynamics of that, or any kind of rally or whooping up a crowd. And you look at some of these, the Jesus camp thing. You look at that and you look at a secular college whooping up the kids at the pep rally for the big football game.
And it's not really
different.
All that different.
It's not different at all. The object might be different. We're throwing Jesus into it, which I think some people think, well, that makes it better. I think it makes it worse.
How does it make it worse?
Because you're using Jesus, the love and passion people have for Jesus, and you're whipping, particularly if you're whipping up into this warfare, take the world for God crusading kind of approach, man, that's just nuts. I think Jesus and trashing him, as some people say, stealing Jesus, is this group that steals the name of Jesus and uses it for stuff like that. And I don't think that demonstrates who he is at all. I don't think that stuff. I just try and imagine Jesus at one of those rallies, just him doing it with his disciples, him doing it with the crowd that ate the 5,000, ate the loaves and fishes. Jesus is not whipping people up into temporal emotional frenzies that don't bear fruit. He's looking for people's lives to be transformed in a way that, and the people I look at that I say, I'm thinking of maybe a dozen and a half people I know worldwide that I would say are the most passionate believers I know. And none of them would go to one of those rallies either. And their passion isn't something that, you know, kind of looks like cheerleaders at the ball game. These are brothers and sisters that deeply live in the reality of who Jesus is. And they make him available to people around them, however God gives them vent to do that. Some of them have influence through writing or speaking or whatever. Some don't. Some have it in their neighborhoods and to their children and grandchildren. But man, to me, when I think of passion, it's not so much that rah, 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 as it is the quiet, convinced desire to make Jesus known in the earth. That's, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've undergone a transformation in the last 4 or 5 years that I don't think has lessened my passion. I think what it's done is it's taken the impatience and the insecurity that got mixed in. So my human zeal added to a genuine passion for God. And it's kind of asked me to kind of take a step back and to kind of sit down. And I've recognized, I've had a couple of really impacting dreams where God kind of breathed fresh life into some of the things that he's said to me, but he's taken off the burden of the I've got to accomplish it. I think what I did is when God, you know, initially spoke some stuff to me and showed me what he wanted to do, some things that in my locale that he wanted to do in the earth, I took upon that as a sense of marching orders, like I've got to accomplish that for God. And I don't think I did that clearly, but that was sort of like, I was excited with it. Oh, let's make this happen. And I think with that desire, then there's the need for the rally, you know, meeting to, I got to get people in action. I got to stir them up to, you know, to get to work. And there isn't a sense of recognizing it's like, you know what? The Lord says, unless the Lord builds the house, they that labor in vain. That thing haunted me. Because I went to seminary and I got my little builder's tools and I got all this. I'm ready to go build the house of God and I'm going to build it with a passion. And you're just going like, oops, I picked up the wrong bag. It's not my job. My job is to do the few things that he said to me. I was an absolutely exhausted passion maniac, you know, with the candle lit at both ends and the middle. And you're just going like, okay, that isn't an expression that I want to embrace anymore, because there's more a sense of going like, Lord, I think I was trying to do your job for you as opposed to simply being a part of whatever process you have to unfold those things. And I think I wanted to play a significant part because I wanted to feel like somehow I was significant in it.
And it's interesting when we do that, even we take a godly passion and use it in our own strength, we still end up doing exactly the same things the world does for secular things. We just throw Jesus into the mix, and that's supposed to make it better.
Yeah, because you can't question that. It's for the kingdom.
So we're still big on big numbers, big rallies, big stuff, whipping people into this frenzied environment of awe, adoration. And I think in terms of the warfare stuff we've been talking about, or the warrior kind of mentality, somebody sent me some stuff this week, and I don't think they've ever listened to this podcast, but they just wanted me to be in touch with their website, thought we had some real things in common. And we still might, but I go to the website, and it's all about men, warriors, going out in the woods.
Beating drums.
You know, finding our identity as men of God. And just, I'm reading it going, oh my gosh, this touches a lot of buttons. Now, I don't know what's behind all that. Some people might have some better stuff behind it than I just had a moment to look at the surface of it. But I guess where my heart just breaks for something like that is, to me, Well, Jesus didn't talk that way. Jesus didn't teach the guys how to be warriors. He didn't, you know, sing the sword of the Lord and beating sticks together. And, you know, we look on the nightly news and we see these little 8, 9, 10-year-olds in Afghanistan or in Syria going to these suicide bomber camps. I mean, we're repelled by it. Do you think Mormons... I'm Mormon, excuse me. Muslims, we'll have to edit that. Muslims,
No. I saw a show this week that would fit.
Muslims or Jewish people would look at those this Jesus camp thing and not have the same sense of fear. Man, the language of Christianity in some segments is a language of war, taking our society back for God, sword of the Lord. It's using language that historically has some real issues.
Well, I think it's because it's a language of imposition. I remember I was on a stage in Germany, and we were at a big little youth conference and stuff like that, and I had a bunch of these little neo-Nazis that were trying to just, you know, break up what was going on. And it's tough enough to do it in another language and have it translated, yeah. Let alone to have hecklers who are throwing little M-80s at the window and stuff like that.
Wow.
So I just figured, you know, I would take on their leader. So I just, I pointed at him, I said, do you have the guts to come up here and find out if God's real? And, you know, because I forced him into the moment, he couldn't back down. So he stands up there and clear as a bell, the Lord just speaks to me. He said, Brad, what are you doing? It's cool, like, well, I thought I was helping you out. You're supposed to, like, get him, Jesus.
I'm doing it for you.
Come on. It's like you're supposed to heil this and just knock him back 6 feet. And the Lord just says, Brad, I don't force anyone into my kingdom. And I felt like I was standing there naked going like, oh, what have I gotten myself into? Why did I do this? What was the impulse? And it was like, because I was feeling intimidated and a little bit fearful, it was sort of like I had to, like, you know, pound on my chest to try to become bigger and better in that moment. And the Lord just used that as a wonderful moment to kind of say, hey, Brad, I'm not like that. You're no different than this guy. And what was wonderful is I just sort of, at that moment, I kind of apologized to him. I said, you know what? I was just about to impose something on you that I can't. And I said, I'm really acting no different than you. And, I mean, it led into a wonderful exchange. But I just sat there going like, Lord, it would have been so much easier if you just sort of like lifted that guy up 6 feet and threw him down. And we go, ooh, our God is powerful. And I just realized, you know, it's like.
Jesus did a lot of that.
Of course. And it's like, but I think behind that is that sense of, you know what, you know, we better do this. And I got to call upon God. It's like, where's the God of Elijah? It's like, you know, and just going like, I think it's just misplaced energy that doesn't have a confident security that realizes, you know what, I don't care what it looks like, God hadn't left the room. He is not out of control. His kingdom will advance. You're not going to stop it. It's like, you know, the Borg, it's resistance is futile, you know. Yeah. The dynamic is there. The issue is God isn't forcing it on anyone.
Yeah.
And when I see that our passion starts to get exuded, I think of the Crusades, which is going like, gosh, might that be at the root of what kind of our present day terrorist problems are? It's like, you know, we were back 1,000 years trying to force the Muslims to convert by the sword, and here they are 1,000 years later saying, well, we're going to, force you to convert, not just by the sword, but bombs, too.
Yeah, they don't even want to convert you, they just want to whack you.
Well, I mean, the news just, there's this American guy just last week that sort of invited everyone to convert to Muslim. And Islam is just going like, okay, man, this just feels like the Crusades in reverse.
Oh, yeah.
And it is. It's that sense of we're going to force our beliefs upon you. And it's like, that doesn't work in a kingdom that's founded on love.
Yeah, someone sent me something they heard from Brian McLaren of Emergent fame, I guess. And he was talking about the subject of killing for Jesus. And he said he heard a quote by Brian McLaren to the Anglicans in May of this year. He's talking about how the genocide card some Christians hold in their back pocket really terrifies non-Christians. He has a Jewish neighbor who told him she listens to American Christian radio not for spiritual needs as much as surveillance. I mean, we talk about the sword of the Lord, and I do think we don't have an appreciation at all for how outsiders hear that. We sing the songs of warfare. We talk about that language in-house, and we kind of know what that means. We're not really going to take up swords and whack people. But when you've got Christian has got a history of doing that, and we're not separated, a ton of years from that, you can understand what Jews who think of the Holocaust, and that was all justified in Christian terminology. So it's not back even 500 years ago to the Inquisition. We're really back, 40 years ago, or 50 years ago. I think it makes sense then why we've got to bend over backwards to make sure that our passion about the life of Jesus is real. This is real fresh for my life right now. I think God's been shaking my tree the last week or so, even with just all the things I'm getting involved in. There's just so many things around my life right now, and some of them are good things, some are wonderful things. But I think God's inviting me back to my passion has to not be about the God journey or life stream or the Jake book or the shack or whatever else. Wonderful things laying out there. But that my passion needs to be, first of all, in an individual sense, it's for him. It's absolutely for him. And knowing him and the power of his resurrection, the fellowship of his suffering, that kind of language, that I'm freshly expanding those boundaries right now, I think, in my heart. But the other thing is, in terms of what I do in the world, it's about selling out to the kingdom, God's rule and reign on the planet. God's, first of all, I can't even think about that in global terms or even community terms until I first thought about it in individual terms. How do I let God rule this life? How do I surrender myself on this day to the reign and rule of God so that my life can be more like his and that I can follow his ways? And then whatever I do today, not because I got to get this going, push that, get that project out the window, but, man, what do I do today that is part of God's kingdom being known in the earth? That's part of that. And one of the things Sarah and I have just made a fresh commitment toward is, and we've been living here a year now, we know our neighbors. I mean, this is the hardest neighborhood in the world to meet people because people just go in their houses and shut the doors, and the backyards are high brick fences. You can't even see in your neighbor's yard from your backyard. We got neighbors that moved in next door, and so we went over and baked them a dozen cookies and welcomed them to the neighborhood.
Jakeston cookies.
We're actually going over to some other people's houses later on that have been here longer than we have, but we don't know them, and they're across the street. We're going to go take them cookies and welcome them to the neighborhood just for fun. Found out the couple next door is Mormon. And, boy, we had a great conversation. She asked about some of the things I'm doing, and I talked a little bit about it. And I tell you what, she said, you guys sound interesting. I want to spend some more time with you folks. So I don't know what will come of that. But again, that passion of we're just not here to do projects and do things and podcasts and write books. And I'm not here for that. I'm here for that kingdom to live in me so that it shapes my life. So that if I'm getting invited to something, I'm not with all the other speakers fighting for the best venue and the best time and the best. So first of all, it's measured in whether this is something I'm living. And I want that to be increasingly true. And then the other bit is it really part of the world I walk in, not just articles and commentary about world events and Jesus Camp movies and all that, but is it really affecting the way I treat Sarah, the way I treat you?
Yeah, please.
Which needs some help. And, it's the way I live the whole of my life. And I think that's what Jesus demonstrated. We had a podcast early on about the gospel of the kingdom, and that's all there is.
Right.
It's God's rule and reign, breaking free on the planet, breaking free in us, and then through us to a world around us. So I'm freshly there. And what I loved about our forum dealing with this podcast we did on Why Are Evangelicals So Angry is that as you read through the comments in the forum, it got down to, first of all, one of the interesting comments is anger's the result of fear, which I think is always true. When fear, and that's why the language of fear in even a lot of Christian circles today, and certainly in our national politics, the language of fear is huge right now because it manipulates people's anger, and that anger can be exploited. But it really got to, you know what, let's get back to focusing on Jesus. I want to focus on Jesus. I don't focus on war and rhetoric, anger, and I just, man, I love that. I love that because that's actually where I want to be.
Yeah, I think when I look at what the Lord kind of has done in me, and this is where I can't really speak for how it gets expressed through others. But I think the Lord recognized the genuine zeal that was inside me. I think because he placed it there.
Yep.
And I think he needed to refocus it, not onto the great things I would accomplish, but to the great friendship that I can see developed with him, which has sort of taken out the agenda. It's taking out the cause. It's like, you know what? If you think about passion, I now think of it as I just want to have an increasingly more fascinating, more dependent, more satisfying friendship with him. That's expressed in a two-way dialogue. That it's like, it's not enough for me to think thoughts about God. It's like, Lord, if you don't communicate back, this doesn't work for me very well. One, I have no idea what to do. But two, I have no real genuine sense of the friendship. If this isn't two-way, I'm going to run out of gas. I cannot perform for you. And I think he just sort of quieted me down.
That's good.
And brought it back into a place of simple friendship. And now it's like, you know, there's people that know me. I mean, there's a lot, you know, you watch it on that little film. There's a lot of different folks that know me that, frankly, would love to enlist me under their cause. They see me as a free agent that, you know, is, ooh, you used to be good at all this.
Oh, in the last few years, you get offered all kinds of
oh,
things.
Oh, yeah. It's like, yeah, move here, move there, start this, do that. And you're just going like, it has been an absolute challenge to kind of just go, no, I really don't think God's asking any of that. And people see me as a place of inactivity. And I'm going like, yeah, that has probably been the biggest challenge in my life. Because it's not hard to get busy. It's really hard to kind of stay quiet and just available and to do the few things that God asked me to. I remember a couple of years ago, we were having lunch or dinner or something like that. But Jesus kind of said, yeah, you know, I think I'm in a great place right now because the only things I got going on are things that I'm confident that the Lord has initiated. You know, I'm only doing the things He showed me to do. I went away from that a little depressed, going like, what? It's like, that would be great, but man, I feel like I got this iron and that fire and this iron, and I'm trying to play all the possibilities, going like, God, breathe on one of them, you know?
Please, please.
You know? And he was going like, but I took that as a sense of going like, you know, Lord, I don't think a picture of fruitfulness is for me to be exhausted, hanging on to some limb, trying not to fall off in the name of Jesus. It's just going like, you know what? Grow in me the things that only you really can produce by my abiding in fellowship with you, in relationship with you. And if you have something for me to do, it won't be a question of, oh, gee, will I do it? It's like, oh, yeah, Lord, I'd love to do that. And I just recognized he is not the slave master I used to serve. And I go, oh, they're different. whoever was that guy, and why did I do all that stuff?
Who was that man with the whip?
Who was
hand?
That masked man? And I realized where I was vulnerable to being pushed into a driven state was really because I wasn't secure and realizing I didn't need to perform. I sort of felt like, well, gosh, if I don't do all these things, if I don't go on this 40-day fast, or I don't, it's like, you know, will God still be pleased with me? And it's like, he's not a bean counter. You know, he's not keeping score. It's like,
right.
You're just going like, Lord, you know, I don't know why it's so challenging to understand that as genuine revelation. Because I think it's not like I didn't hear it before.
Well, yeah.
But the light never turned on with that sense of, you know, come to me all you who are weary and heavy laden and I'll give you rest. I'm going like, I don't think that was spoken to pastors. Because all the ones I know are plumb exhausted.
Yeah, we were serving.
For the kingdom.
We were serving hard so the other people could have that.
Yeah.
We were working on the Sabbath so the rest of them didn't have to or whatever.
And I realize it's like whenever there's this sense of, you know, it's the passion of God. And it starts to spill beyond just the simplicity of meeting him daily and responding to the things that he puts in front of you. When you start adding a cause and something else to it, I got to step back and go like, I don't know. Unless God has given a specific directive for that, I tend to look at that as going like, I think that's somebody's ego that's needing to build a kingdom.
Well, what I notice too is even if God gives you a specific directive about something, the excitement is still never about the directive. It's never about the something. The excitement is still about him. When I see people get whipped up into frenzies about the latest way to do church or the latest visitation from God or whatever, what I'm noticing is, and noticing in my own life in times past, that fire and drive and that purpose-driven kind of mentality comes from a place of emptiness. It doesn't come from a place of fullness. when I'm full, when I have the sense of who God is and who He's made me to be, and I live out of that reality, I live at peace. And, you know, I can be with people doing all kinds of different things, but I don't get caught up in the things. And when I've met people in the course of this journey who are caught up in things, who are caught up in, you know, just a big house church convention in Denver last weekend. I've heard some people already talk about it. And, you know, it's that rah-rah, here we are, the house churches again. And I just go, you know what? And I'm sure there's people there that are very genuinely at some wonderful place in their journey, learning to think outside the box, and it was helpful. So I'm not ragging on the conference at all. I know the people who run it. These are the people I know. I know the people who run it, and I think their hearts are wonderful, great. But I do, when I see all that stuff, I hear more excitement about house church than I do the reality of Jesus making Himself known in the earth. And to me, whenever I lose that edge of who He is in my life to this day, that's when I get lost in a book I'm writing, a project I want to do, people I want to touch base with. I get lost in things when I miss Him. And when I'm finding that fullness in Him, I still do the other things. But the other things are not the thing that's masking my emptiness. It may be because God's asked me to.
Those other things are not the things you're using to fill up.
And you're not
emptiness.
Excited about. I mean, I'm fine doing it. But in the end, what I'm excited about is who He is in my life. And I'm excited when another life. I've got a couple of friends right now that I've known for a long period of time that are just finally detoxing out of some real bondage and finally having a sense of direction and fullness about their life. They've been waiting a long time, hoping that God would break through something. And I mean, I've struggled with them. I've listened to them yell and scream, and I've loved them through it. And they're just coming to wonderful moments of breakthrough in the relationship. And it's just, man, it's wonderful to talk to them. It's wonderful to have the exchanges now. And it's not things that we're fascinated with or even frustrated by, but it's Him. And it's the joy of knowing Him and having a settledness about His purpose in our lives and a fullness to that reality. Man, if I look at anything in the Gospels, I think Jesus was moving His guys that way. I want you to have a sense of settledness and fullness of who I am and who God is in you and who will be in you after the resurrection on the day of Pentecost. I want you to have such a be at peace with that, that you'll just be my witnesses. You'll just be whatever. It's not a project. It's not an it to create. I mean, someone wrote the other day, we're starting at this. We're starting a new it. We're starting a house church. And I'm like, going, oh, please don't. Just love people. And I even find people in my life that
That is so foreign to so many people, because all they've ever known is, well, okay, you know, like, you know, somebody has flicked my bick, therefore I must light something on fire. You know, it's like, I must do something with this. As opposed to simply letting it reflect the beauty and the glory of who Jesus is. I mean, when I look at in the Gospel of John, and it's like, we're, you know, coming to the end where Jesus knows, okay, there's the last few things I got to say to the guys. He said, you know, I want the world to know that this is true, and here's how I'd like you to express that. I'd like you to just love each other. It's like, ooh, there wasn't a crusade. There wasn't a 12-city tour that needed to go on.
It wasn't a 501c3 we were trying to find.
You know, yeah, it was sort of like, if you guys will just love each other. And it's like he was talking to the people in the room.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't talking about, now go love everyone for me. He just said, love each other. And the world looking in on that will see something that will be the validating earmark that the rest of what you're talking about must be real. That will be the fruit and the convincing evidence.
Yeah, but try to whip up a crowd with that kind of talk.
Well, it doesn't. There was only 13, and they were all in one room.
it does me, though. I tell you, this stirs my passion. This is what I want people who are lost in all the ways they're looking to find the last great move of God to come to rest in. This God is real enough on His own. This Jesus is worth loving for Himself, not to be part of a cause, not to go change the world, but just to become part of the kingdom by letting Him lord in me, by letting Him have His way in me, in the way I live in the earth. And that if millions of people were doing that on the planet at the same time, there would be a wonderful thing to look in on. But it wouldn't be organized, or it wouldn't be manipulated. I meet people now that I tell you, I get real excited about meeting them. I sit down with them. I find out that, gosh, and then I find out they're into something.
Yeah, and they're about to sell it.
You know, and maybe they're not even selling it. Maybe it's just, this is my latest guru guy, and you got to read this book, Wayne, or you've got to do this. It's not, hey, this book's helpful to you, maybe you'll enjoy it. You've got to read this. This is the... when people are into something, I just kind of step back and say, oh, man, I have a hard time with that. I really have a hard time wanting to link up other people to that because they may enjoy the friendship, but the friendship is so burdened down with the next it they're trying to do. And it can even be a good it. It can be, it can be some stuff that I really love, but...
And there can be some fruit that comes out of it.
God's always good about that.
Why do you think we're so susceptible to events? And, you know, the rally cry unto a something.
Gosh, you're
pretty inoculated to them. But it took a while. Because I do think it's like, you know, so oftentimes it's like, why did those end up gaining such a following? I do think it's because people are looking for something, but why is it that we all pin our hopes on an event? I mean, it seems like that's what's behind. It's like, if we'll just get all these people together doing this thing, then it's going
to
happen.
And then when you go to those things, you have this great euphoric weekend, you still go back to reality.
And there's a disconnect.
And then the planners of those things, within a year or two, have to switch names, switch agendas, switch something. It's like a drug. A little bit went a long ways, and then, you know, it doesn't go so far anymore. So I need more, and I need different. And I just think it becomes because of this incredible emptiness. We've not taught people how simply to live in the life of Christ. We've not taught people how to know Him as He is and find their fullness in Him, and we're willing to keep using cheap substitutes for that. And whooping people up into a frenzy, I think, is a cheap substitute for that. And like you say, God can use it. I know God's used some of those things in my past, but always because I came back from that going, that didn't satisfy. It might have been fun for a moment, particularly if I was one of the ones on stage. not if I was always one in the audience, but if I was one on stage. But, you know, in the long term, by Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, that's already draining off. I heard one pastor tell me, and I think it's true, he said, the most depressing day for pastors is usually Monday. Every one of them goes through this. Even there's a psychological awareness to this among people who help ministry people. Is it almost like postpartum depression, the post-Sunday blues of just...
I just gave birth to my sermon.
Well, just having done all that and put yourself out there and disappointed with the effects of it, maybe disappointed it doesn't go as far as you hoped it would go. And yeah, there's a real deal with that. And I think I came away from some of these events going, you know, if that's it, you got to have one of those every weekend. Or at least every couple weekends. And if God isn't more... What I think Sarah and I have discovered over the last few years is that God is real enough. And it's not a euphoric, weird, you know, beat your chest and beat the drum and slap swords together, slinging the sword of the Lord. It is just simply waking up tomorrow and, Jesus, I want to live in You today. Lead me today by Your grace. Show me who You are and how You want me to love today. And I'm in. And that reality has taken us further than any rah-rah, sis-boom-bah rally ever did.
Yeah, I think whenever it's disconnected with daily life, it will have an inherent, I think, kind of disappointment because it's not offering you something that you live. It's trying to say, well, come to this and that will fix you. And it seems like, gosh, anything lasting and enduring, anything real and genuine in my life, I know, has been something that has been the product of walking it out day in and day out.
That is part of your life, not separated from it.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I mean, in my history of doing stuff, there's some high water marks at the corporate dimension where we truly encountered the living God in a marvelous way. And I look upon those things with fond memories going like, that was amazing. Because the focus wasn't on who was on the stage, what was on, but it was like somehow God really was present for everyone to relate to. And I imagine everyone probably has their own unique sense of what that was because God was genuinely touching each and everyone as an individual, not as, I'm endorsing your great cause, And so I love those.
Yep.
But I know what was enduring out of that is that moment. That point of revelation caused me to see and walk with God a little differently. And when those things happened, those were fantastic. But if it's just this big ramp up unto a meeting so as to get something, and it's not something I know how to function in a daily way, that thing will drain out quickly.
And how many of us function daily in a stadium with a bunch of whooping people? I mean, it doesn't work. So hopefully this gets us back to who Jesus is. Hey, we're going to get to that question and answer podcast one of these days. Last call.
Well, I got some zingers for you, Wayne.
So if you got some questions for Brad, send them to me. If you got some questions for me, send them to Brad. And probably the next week or two, we're going to tackle those and just see what we've got.
None about the flesh-colored leotard.
Please.
Thank you for traveling with us on the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.